tú la ves,
you can breathe now. Abigail lives. Lulu has been recovered, and now the party is trying to escape from the City of Fear. However, I can't help feeling that it's all been too easy. As if something or someone is lurking in the shadows. Well, only the dice know. So, listener, join us as we roll and tell. Welcome back to Roll and Tell. I'm Jeffrey.
And I'm Christian.
And we are your players, your storytellers. And if you say our names three times in the mirror in the dark, we will appear before you with a set of dice ready to play a game with you.
And I'll have a pretzel and some beer cheese in my hands asking, do you want some?
And there's nothing creepy about it whatsoever.
You cannot refuse our offer.
Yeah, if you roll a one, you die.
Yeah, I mean, that's not creepy. It's just...
It's the rules.
It's threatening, I guess.
Yeah, it's just the rules of the game. Also, like, we're covered in blood.
Yeah. All right, well, that's a little creepy.
All right, we are an actual play podcast with no game masters, only chaos. Yeah, Christian, I think the previous episode kind of proved that because, you know, all of our major burdens were resolved by randomness.
It's been such a unique experience being in the City of Fear, especially that last episode where all of our worries kind of went out the window. Like, we're obviously not out of the woods yet, but
yeah.
I mean, the fact that we got Lulu back without really trying.
Huge.
And then we were able to reunite with Abigail and Lulin, and Abigail is alive. It's just everything was chaotic in the most positive way.
Yeah, which means we're probably going to have some danger injected into here very soon. So we got to try to get out of the City of Fear, get Abigail help, so let's hop back in.
Let's do it.
So, Christian, I've got an idea about this. I don't want to spend too much time, you know, trudging through the City of Fear and figuring our way out, but I don't want them to get out scot-free. So we've got a move we can employ here from Dungeon World and Perilous Wilds that'll help make this interesting without slowing us down too much. We're going to undertake a perilous journey.
Boy, oh boy. Doing these, this move is honestly a whole lot of fun. And what makes this move so appropriate for now is because, as we've discussed in the past, the City of Fear is in the entirety of the walls of Austeel. I mean, Austeel is a huge city. You know, you have initially the huge wall around the city, and we discussed that there are, you know, smaller walls that branch off it, but most notably the ones that go between districts of the city and that kind of thing. And so it's not like it's going to be a short journey for us, and to avoid, you know, scene after scene of like, oh, well, we make it this far in the wall and then we go to here in the wall and that kind of thing. This kind of takes care of that journey as a whole and pinpoints certain interesting events that might happen on the way.
Yeah. And the way this is going to work is we're actually doing a series of moves. We need somebody to be on watch. We need somebody to scout ahead. But probably most importantly for navigating these walls, we need somebody to navigate because we don't want to get lost.
Yeah.
The way I think this is going to work is when we roll for chaos, obviously there's the opportunity for an interruption to occur. Mm-hmm. But an alter will just still be this, but we'll change what move we use in response. So there's a chance we plan all of this and then it gets interrupted. So we'll see what happens. Wouldn't that just be the way?
That would be so fun.
We're at a chaos what, Christian?
We are at a chaos 2. Is the lowest we've ever been.
We're at a chaos 2?
We're at a chaos 2.
Holy cow.
It is going to be practically... It literally will be impossible to get an interruption. We could only get an alteration.
Well, if it lands on the two, that's in chaos. So that would be an interrupt.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. Never mind then.
So there's
very low chance of getting it.
Low chance of either. I guess it is important that we plan this out. The question I have is who's navigating, who's scouting, and who's staying sharp? This staying sharp is a wisdom move. Scout ahead is a wisdom move. And navigate is an intelligent move. But I don't know that Abigail, our most intelligent party member, is in a position to be navigating.
Exactly. Are we limiting who does these to our player characters, or are some of the NPCs able to take over?
I think some of the NPCs can take over. We know Lulin gets a plus one to everything, right?
Yeah. And I was wondering if, you know, maybe Sunder had a plus when it came to navigating these walls, because even though he's still new to the Thronebreakers, he's still a bit more familiar.
He has a plus one to everything. But I do want to ask, does he have an additional plus one forward to navigating these walls? Because, I mean, some of the walls, he's definitely been on top of them. He knows the city extremely well. Yeah, we're about to show why it sucks being at a two, because we're going to ask the question, can Sunder navigate these walls? And odds are not great. So let's say near sure thing.
I would say a near sure thing.
Oh, yes. Yes, he can.
Thank God.
Yeah, so he gets a plus one. So he's a plus two to the navigate role. So we'll put him as navigator.
Okay, awesome. Yeah.
Diodi's got good whiz, so he should stay sharp or scout ahead. But Luwid probably should scout ahead.
Yeah, yeah. I think the staying sharp would definitely be a Diodi thing.
But Luwid's carrying Abigail. He can't scout ahead.
Shoot. Okay. Then maybe we have to reverse the roles in this.
I'm so worried about putting Diodi out at front. We could put Lulin at front, but if Diodi wants to like step up and do it.
What if Lulin and Diodi are in front together?
Okay, yeah. We'll use Diodi's modifier, but Lulin's with him.
Yeah.
And Lulu, Abigail, and Luwid are the meat of the group with Sunder.
Sunder's just shouting out, take a left up there.
You're going to want to make a left at the... man, I almost said Boner's Joint. As a district. Because they all got to be Boner's bone related.
Dude, what if there are like people in the city that are known as Boners, and they just like, they are essentially architects. They just work with like bones and stuff.
Yeah, I'm crying. Boner's Joint. Because I liked it so much in my head. Because like, oh, it's a pun on joint. And it sounds like they put bones together.
That's so good.
Mm. Anyway, so we need to perform three roles right now. Stay sharp, navigate, and scout ahead.
Yep.
Luwid is staying sharp, so I'll roll that. You roll the other two, one for Sunder and one for Diodi. And these roles are a little bit complicated, so we're just going to tell you the results of them to keep things moving. If you're interested, be sure to check out Perilous Wilds and check out the travel and exploration moves. Well, I've already failed.
Oh, that's one of us.
Man, Luwid doesn't fail a lot, so he... Oh, shoot, I forgot. Hey, Christian, you know I forgot something.
Yes, you did.
I did forget something, but yeah. I've just been slipped a letter on my table.
Oh, did the owl finally arrive?
Yeah. Let me go ahead and open this up. Oh, Christian, do you know what this says?
would you like a pretzel with some beer cheese?
Well, it has beer cheese stains on it.
Oh, that is definitely mine, yeah.
Yeah, it says Luwid leveled up.
Oh, I did send that out like a week ago.
It's here.
That's incredible. Just in time, too, for the episode.
Yeah, and just in time to get another experience from failure.
Yep.
So he's at 2 experience now. And level 4, Lewis level 4, he's got a new move. You'll find out what that is when he uses it, but I'm pretty excited about it.
Dude. Like, I wish I was failing so that Diodi could get more experience. But Diodi and Sunder both got complete successes.
Well, that's good.
It is
two.
Good.
So you're going to choose 2 from Scout Ahead. So we're going to have 2 Scout Ahead bonuses, and then you avoid dangers and distractions and make good time. Wow. Nice job, Sunder.
Yeah.
But what are the 2 things you mark from?
From Scouting Ahead?
Scout Ahead. We might use this for the following scene because it seems like they're going to navigate no problem thanks to Sunder.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't see a reason for the beneficial aspect of terrain. So then I'll have to go with the other 2. You make a discovery and you notice a sign of nearby danger.
That might be just like information we get.
Right.
Okay. Then this scene, I think, is going to be more of like a little travel ditty. As like mostly we're okay, but we learned some stuff. Now, actually, Christian, before you roll for the discovery, let's go ahead and roll for chaos and see if there's an interruption. So loosely, the scene is going to be we travel with no dangers approaching us. However, we learn some information about a potential danger and make a discovery.
All right. Let's see if that happens.
I see your face.
There's no...
Is it a two?
There's no freaking way.
Is it a two?
It's a two. There's no freaking way.
Interruption. All right. So here we'll play like these. We're going to play some like rewind noises and just delete the past 5 minutes. All right. So we're traveling and everything was going to go great when something happens. And it still could be great as we learned. I'll roll for the event focus this time. You did it last time.
Okay.
And I want to make myself useful. Oh, you got to be kidding me. Introduce a new NPC.
Not another one.
We got so many NPCs. A new NPC. Who are we going to meet? Let's find out. Shall you be the man of action or...
Peruge. I'll be action. No way. Befriend.
Befriend advice.
Immediately, my first thing was like a defect of the throne breakers is like letting us in on something.
Yeah, like we're going to know what to expect if we go down the path we go down.
Yeah.
All right. So let's roll up a modifier, a noun, a motivation verb, and a noun. You take both nouns.
Okay. Both nouns. I'm very pro noun. Right? Good. No? Okay, that's fine.
Silence.
I liked my joke.
All right. So no. I've got my modifier. Uncouth.
Magus. How do you pronounce that? Magus?
Magus. So I guess it's one of the people who have the elemental magic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So this falls into the whole idea that it could be a throne breaker.
Yeah. Feels like it already. Then for motivation, I got create.
Sensuality.
Great sensuality, huh?
I'm almost seeing this being a case where like this is someone around like maybe Diodi's age, and he starts kind of like he gains some sort of feelings for whoever this may be, and then that causes like some competition in like Lulu. I don't know.
So create sensuality. You're saying that there's some flirtation from this uncouth magus.
Yeah, yeah, and Diodi kind of like starts falling.
Okay, that's interesting. That's interesting. Create sensuality. I dig the flirtation angle.
Yeah.
Because they're uncouth as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me get a gender. Female.
That's perfect.
Female. I assume they're an elf, so I'm not even going to ask you, Chaos.
Right.
I'm tired of being harmed by you.
I'm sure we can start asking that question again if we ever leave Osteel.
Get out of the city. Yeah. But it just seems like this place is just homogenous.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're going to give us some kind of advice. And mm-hmm. Christian, I think we'll roll that up off mic so that the audience can hear what that advice is in character.
Of course.
And even though this is an interruption is defined as interrupting us on the way to doing what we were going to be doing. So I think we're still traveling, Christian. So I think the structure is still the same.
Yeah. Okay.
So as we scout ahead, I think you and Lulin are going to encounter this person first.
Okay.
Diodi, you have found yourself in a position where you must scout ahead for the group. This is something that I think you probably would believe Luid would do normally, but he's stuck watching Abigail and Lulu. How are you feeling right now?
Diodi's definitely concerned for Abigail's well-being, but it is kind of cool that Diodi's getting to take charge in this moment, and he wants to make the most of it.
And Lulin is, of course, with you at the moment, and I think she can sense your bubbling excitement.
Lulin's still concerned about the general situation, she's much happier now that Lulu's with them. But after all the trouble they've been through, she's concerned for a lot of reasons. It's been dangerous in here. Lulin and Abigail were both attacked, and she's worried about that happening again. And especially after Lewitt had talked about going to the Brotherhood. I imagine Lulin hasn't had many interactions with the Brotherhood, but now this interaction with Brother Felix has really kind of tainted her vision of them. Even if, you know, Brother Felix doesn't represent them as a whole.
So you'd say she's in her normal kind of semi-tense state, huh?
Yeah, for sure.
Is D.O.D. aware of that at all?
I think D.O.D. has a feeling of that and occasionally, you know, tries to get her participation in looking forward and making, you know, small conversation here and there to try to ease her. Lulin, isn't this just as dark and, I don't know, almost sinister as this has felt? Isn't this just incredible that someone made a city within a city? And Diodi is looking around at the walls, and just all of his life, he thought that these walls were just solid, huge stones. Mm. Because of everything that's happened up until now, he hasn't had the full opportunity to appreciate the beauty of what the city actually is. And so he's provoking that conversation with Lulin, and she responds, "Yeah, that's really cool, Diodi." You can tell that she's distracted. You can tell that she's not really fully into this conversation that D.O.D.'s trying to have with her.
As you're about to speak again, as you are approaching a bend in the wall, and as you're about to step around the corner, some item flies in the darkness and hits the wall to your right.
D.O.D. just stops, and Lulin stops, and they look at what was thrown on the ground.
I'm going to actually roll at random for what item it is. It's a bag of gold. And as you look at that, the bag of the gold hits the ground and you hear that clink, making it very clear that this is a bag of money. You hear a voice from around the corner say, "Worthless trash."
And when the sack of coins hits the ground, I imagine maybe like one or two flew out for sure, like landed mm-hmm. next to the
rolled
bag.
Across the stones. Yeah.
And Lulin sees the bag and she looks back towards Lewid for like affirmation.
Yeah, and I mean like they were pulling up the rear, so they've only just caught up. And Lewid looks down at the bag and he's had a run-in with cursed coins before. So he shakes his head no to Lulin.
And she gives another look of, "Are you sure?"
He just puts a hand out to suggest like, "Just wait a minute."
And she nods her head. And D.O.D., initially looking at the bag of coins, less interested in it than the reasons that Lulin is, looks over to where it was tossed from, takes a couple steps forward to look around the corner to see where that voice is coming from.
As you look around the corner, it's dark. There's only a single torch that is lit in this corridor. Within this corridor, there are boxes, crates, and they've all been pried open with a crowbar. And you look, you see a woman in a black hooded cloak, and she has a crowbar in her hand. Then, as you look a little longer, you see her reach her other hand out, a black gloved hand, a glove that reaches up to her elbow, and a light starts to emit from it. And she looks like she's scanning the boxes. She tightens that hand into a fist and says, "It's all trash."
D.O.D. doesn't know whether or not to approach this person. He feels as if they should possibly just completely avoid any possible interaction with anyone because they don't know who's dangerous down here. D.O.D. looks back toward Lewitt and Sunder, points with his hand around the corner like, "Someone's there. Let's just keep moving."
And then, as you're pointing that, you hear a voice from around the corner say, "Excuse me, who's there?"
And D.O.D. turns quickly to look at this person again.
And you see that they've now turned fully towards you. And beneath this black hood in the dim firelight, you see her hair is long and is the same color as the flames. Her eyes are glowing blue at the moment, as she seems to have cast some kind of spell. And her face in the dim firelight is just covered in freckles.
Almost as if the color of her hair imitates what Duty feels inside of his chest at this initial moment. There's some sort of heat feeling inside of him, and he doesn't know how to respond. He, in this moment, forgets his name, and he stammers out,
We're just heading right through, going that direction.
And he just cannot say anything worth saying.
To maybe make matters worse, as you're fumbling, she starts to walk towards you. And you hear her long black riding boots click on the stone as she walks. And she approaches you saying,
"Oh, you don't need to say anything at all. I sense something very special about you."
I'm not special, no.
And she smiles, and her little freckled cheeks bunch up as she does. And she's now close enough to you that she puts a hand on you, on your shoulder.
Diodi, quite flustered. He doesn't know what to do. He is out of his mind right now with feelings that he doesn't remember really feeling in his life before.
Excuse me, please. Please take your hand off, my friend.
She retracts her hand. She puts her hands in the air.
Oh, no harm meant. No harm meant at all. I just couldn't help but determine that your friend here is quite magically powerful.
Diodi goes wide-eyed and looks back at Luid and is trying to gain some sort of information from him, whether he should run away or stay where he is. He knows he's powerful, like, magically. And most of the people in the town know that he has these abilities. From what she just said, it almost feels like she's unfamiliar with him, but still senses what is special about him, giving almost this sense of danger.
Luid sharply moves his head to suggest, "Diodi, get back here."
Diodi skips on his feet to get out of distance from this person.
And she watches you go. She has a curious gaze about her. But then her gaze falls on Luid, and she sees the party. About six people, one in the arms of the other, a child. She says,
My, what a motley crew we have here.
Abigail, tilting her head in the direction of this fiery-haired person, says,
"Yeah, and we're not accepting applications right now."
Clever.
And she walks towards the group rather boldly, and she says,
"You know, you all are the most interesting thing that I've seen down here so far."
And she walks closer to Luid, and she looks at Luid in the face, and then Abigail, and she smiles broadly.
"Now, you two wouldn't happen to be those wanted elves that are having this city tear itself apart looking for, are you?"
Sunder steps forward.
"If they were, I would have taken them in already."
"Oh, interesting. Captain of the Guard. Let me see what I can do here."
And then her eyes light up blue again. Luid is watching her carefully, but he doesn't sense any danger from her. And then her eyes just pop out of being blue, and she says,
"Oh, okay. Well, you're lying,"
she says to Captain Sunder. She has a spell called Detect Truth. And she points at Luid and the party, and she says,
"That means you're Luid Durrell. You're, well, I don't know your name."
And she points at Abigail.
"Tiffany. My name's Tiffany."
"Yeah, we'll come back to that."
You like see her eyes flash blue really quick, like a lie detector. And she points at Diodi and she says,
"Oh, wow. That must mean you're Diodi Kismeta."
Diodi, trying not to look her direction, but like ekes out a little smile as he's like tucking his face away in the direction of Luid. And he stammers out, "Yep, that's me."
"So you haven't been kidnapped? You seem at peace with the situation."
He looks back strongly towards this person. "No, I have not been kidnapped. This is what I want."
"What else do you want, Diodi?"
"What do you mean?"
"Do you want to help the people of this city? Would you like to know some things that maybe you are lacking?"
"Well, of course I want to help the city and the people of Osteel."
"What about the family of Osteel?"
"Yeah, of course. I love family Osteel. And I always want the best for them."
She nods gently to herself. She looks at Luid, and Luid is watching her like a hawk. She looks back at Diodi and she says,
"Well, in that case, I have some information I'd love to share with you, but
I'd like to know what I get in return for it.
Information about what? Is there something that we need to know about Family Austeel right now?
She smiles knowingly, and she says nothing, as if she's unwilling to even give a morsel of it until you have suggested an offer. You'll have to excuse my brusqueness, but we are in a little bit of a situation and we need to get somewhere quickly, and you are standing in our way, and we have a lot of enemies down here, and I'm not sure that we can trust you.
And Lulin, backing you up in this exact moment, says,
yeah, and if this information doesn't help us right now get Tiffany some help, then frankly, just like Lou had said, you are standing in our way.
She rolls her shoulders back, as if she's working out some tension that put in her. Wasn't expecting too much resistance.
Okay, well, let me introduce myself. Maybe that will put you more at ease. My name is Willow. I'm something of a information gatherer, and I mean you no harm.
Well, what's so important about this information that you want to share it with us so badly?
Well, I have a feeling it's very important to you, D.O.D., and probably to your friend, Luid.
If you really think it's that important, then what do you want for it?
She looks at you, and you see her mulling something over. And then she smiles as she makes direct eye contact with you.
You know what, D.O.D.? I'll give it to you for free, but just you.
D.O.D. looks toward Luid and then back towards Willow, and he blushes a little bit, and he takes a step forward. He understands what she's trying to do.
Luid puts a hand on your shoulder, and he says, we have no reason to trust her.
But there are a lot of things happening in the city right now, and I think the more we know about what's going on, the better. So maybe don't trust her, but maybe trust me.
Understood, D.O.D. I trust you.
D.O.D. turns back towards Willow, takes a step.
When you take a step in her direction, she flits on her heels to turn away from you and starts to walk around the corner, seductively motioning a finger for you to follow.
D.O.D. does not look back towards the group.
As you go around the corner with Willow, Luid says to Abigail,
I don't like her.
She's not my type either.
Lulu has been just like holding onto Luid's leather armor the whole time. She's been looking back and forth between this whole exchange. She does not know what to make about any of this, but she does not like the way this woman is talking to D.O.D.
I imagine there's a little bit of jealousy going on.
You go around the corner, and she continues to walk further down the hallway, her black hooded cloak swishing in the darkness.
And D.O.D. keeps following her until she stops. And when they stop, D.O.D. asks, do you want to do this verbally, or... And then he holds out his hand and gestures towards that as if they could convey information that way.
She scrunches up her face, and I'm going to ask a question. Does she know just how much information you could glean from her if you use this move?
I don't know. I'm going to say 50-50 on that one.
No. She scrunches up her freckled face, and she looks at you, and she says,
my, that's a little intimate, don't you think?
It's nothing I haven't done before.
Then it's not special?
D.O.D.'s starting to catch the vibes she's giving off. And he starts to stammer again.
No.
And he doesn't know how to respond.
She starts to reach towards you and she says, oh, you sweet thing, I'm just playing with you.
D.O.D. does a little giggle.
She lowers her hood to reveal the full fiery mane that is contained underneath it. And you can see under her cloak that she's wearing what looks like a noblewoman's dress, along with tall black riding boots. And she starts to take off one of her long black gloves, and she holds a hand out to you.
D.O.D., seeing this is probably the prettiest hand he's ever touched when it's come to this kind of thing, hesitates for a moment, then proceeds to push his arm out further and grab her forearm, and he's going to do brainworm.
Go for it.
Yeah, that is full success. Please, I mean, like, I love the successes, but I want D.O.D. to level up. Okay, so three questions.
She peers into your eyes, and you hear her voice inside your head.
Can you hear me, D.O.D.?
Yes. I'm sure you might have guessed by the, let's say, rather forwardness of their name. But the Thronebreakers are planning to revolt against Family Austeel.
We've had an idea that this would be happening, but is there anything else you can share about that?
Well, look around you, Dioti. They've gathered supplies, resources, magic. They're ready. And if they go through with it, it'll be bloody.
Do you know how soon they're going to try to act?
Let me put it this way. I'm surprised they haven't already done it.
Yeah, so Dioti understands that. That could mean what they're planning could happen at any moment. It also relays a hint that there's something that has gotten in their way, and he wonders if that's him. In this moment that he's processing that information, he takes the opportunity to dive deeper into her brain, to figure out more of what's going on. To any observer inside this or outside, they wouldn't be able to feel Dioti doing this, and it would feel like a split moment for Dioti, a second in time. And so he's going to ask, what does your character want most?
I guess we'll roll from the table. Expose.
Home.
Expose home.
I have a question. If she is willing to divulge the information of the Thronebreakers, it indicates to me that she may not be part of the Thronebreakers. I'm curious then, if she's not part of the Thronebreakers, my burning question, is she in some way associated with the Sorceress?
What leads you to believe that she might be working for the Sorceress? That's interesting.
In my opinion, she's of some sort of rogue quality. Like, you know, apparently is in Austeel. She may live in Austeel, but it doesn't seem like she has a side for Family Austeel or the Thronebreakers. So it makes me feel like she works for some outside party, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Because if she was working for Family Austeel, she would have told this information to them.
Right. She would have actually actively tried to stop it.
And if she's working for the Thronebreakers, she's betraying them right now. So the question we need to determine is, is she an independent or is she working for somebody?
Yeah.
I guess like the only other faction she could be working for is the Sorceress. So what do you think the odds of that would be?
Yeah, it's for sure higher than 50-50.
Yeah. So I think maybe likely, because it feels possible that she's an independent as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, this could be incredibly interesting if it is the case. Is Willow working for the Sorceress? I rolled a 2.
No way. Is that true? Is that true?
That's an exceptional yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I was just staring at the number in disbelief. It's an exceptional yes. She's working for the Sorceress.
No way.
Man, it's surprising she wouldn't know who Abigail is then, especially if she's an information gatherer. Maybe she does and she's just lying about it. Because, like, she could be lying about a lot of things.
Which could also lead back to, and who are you? I'm Tiffany. We'll get back to that.
Yeah. And so I'm going to ask the question, does she know who Abigail is? Does she know who Lewitt is? Does she know all of this because of everything? I mean, with that in mind, like, it's very likely.
Yeah.
Yes.
My gosh.
She was lying, which is hilarious because she's detecting people's lies and just lying in the process.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then this leads us back around to what her character wants most. And that
expose
was
home.
Expose home. This is why I asked, is she trying to create an opening for the Sorceress to turn Austeel into her new home?
Sorceress wants to take more territory? Yeah, I mean, I guess that reason is could very well. Her pet's already here.
And it's, you know, it's not just a home for the Sorceress. It would be a home for both of them.
I got a question then. Actually, that's good. I want to ask this. This seems very logical to me. Expose home. Willow is here in secret. She's not telling other people information. Was she, for some reason, exiled from Austeel? Is she originally from here and she wants to come back?
Yeah, that sounds logical.
With that logic in mind, I think that's a sure thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
So she was exiled. She wants to come back. Here's what you see. You see flashes, images in your mind. You see a young red-headed elf playing in the streets of Austeel. She's a cute kid, well-dressed, well-taken care of. Looks like she might be the daughter of a noble. She's playing. She looks so happy. and the image slowly starts to distort. You see her aging as she's playing, getting taller, older, growing more beautiful. But the stone streets beneath her disappear, crumbling away from the memory. The white and blue regalia, the houses, the walls, the toys, all vanish. And she's still running as if she was playing, but now there's fear on her face. Like she's running from something. And she doubles over, grabbing her knees. She turns back, and you see the city of Austeel. You see torches on the walls, guards watching. You see tears in her eyes. She clenches her jaw. She tries to straighten her clothing, finds a bit of her dignity, and then walks further from the light of Austeel into the darkness. And the image fades, and her face comes back into your view for a moment. And you see this woman watching you with almost the face of a cat. Like she's enjoying this and she's playing with you. But she doesn't know what you just saw.
Duty was going to dive deeper, figure out some other things about her. But I think that affected him in a way that he doesn't want to anymore. Doesn't want to dive deeper. Duty's face goes a little bit sad when he was clasping her forearm and her clasping his in return. He just lightens his fingers, indicating that he's ready to let go. And he's not staring into her eyes, but more so just through her.
She's observant. She knows something happened. She releases your hand, and you see the playfulness in her face, whether it's an artifice or not, fades a little bit. And she says, quite genuinely, "Is something wrong?" She knows she just told you some upsetting information, but she's perceiving that this is something different.
Yeah, there's something wrong with this city.
Yes, Diodi, there is. There really is.
Still staring through Willow, simply says, "I appreciate the information. I'm still not sure why you shared it with me, but I appreciate it nonetheless."
When you say that, you see a whole different attitude come over her. She takes her cloak and she sort of pulls it tightly around her, as if she's grown very uncomfortable, as if she's felt exposed. She takes a deep breath. She meets your eyes. Do you look at her?
He's still staring through her, but when he notices her intent into his eyes, he refocuses on hers.
"I'll admit I feel kinship with you. I think we've both been used by this city."
Man, her connecting with him like that. I mean, the moment she says that, it's like she unlocked something in Diodi's heart. Not only does Diodi think this woman is pretty, and now he's completely empathizing with what he's just seen within her past and her thoughts. When she verbally expresses that they've both been used by the city, it makes him feel so understood. He's been able to feel a connection with Luid and Abigail so far, but that was more of like a protective thing, as if they cared about him and they wanted to support his dreams and goals. This is the first time he feels like somebody actually feels what Diodi's feeling. And he blushes and he feels warm, nods up and down slowly. And he says in return,
"And I'm trying to do everything I can to change that. Nobody should have to feel used by somebody else, and I'm working hard to make those changes in the city."
She sees you blush, and she hears your words. She smiles briefly before quickly breaking her gaze and looking towards the ground. I don't know if it's clear to Diodi, but something has made her deeply uncomfortable. And she pulls her hood back over her head, and she says,
"Me too, Diodi. Me too."
Diodi starts to walk back towards the group and notices that Willow isn't following, and he turns back towards her. "Thank you again. Maybe we'll see each other again sometime soon."
And she looks at you. You see her fighting for words. And finally, she lands on,
"Maybe. But maybe it's better we don't."
"Well, I'd like to."
That laughs in character. She giggles to herself a little bit. Yeah, you see her put her still bare hand up to her mouth to, like, cover her laugh.
"Oh, Diodi, you're cute."
Diodi grows a huge smile on his face as much as he's trying to contain it, and starts to turn away once again, but then turns back and asks,
"Listen, I don't know I've got a couple things to finish, to do here, but maybe we can plan on meeting up at one of the taverns in the greater waterfall districts.
Deodi Kismeta, is that an offer for a date?
Maybe.
How am I supposed to say no to that?
And she sort of seductively puts her glove back on. All right, I'm going to grab a tavern name from the Solo Adventurer Toolbook.
Nice.
Toolbox. Oh. The Eye of the Anvil.
The Eye of the Anvil.
In one of the districts, there's the Eye of the Anvil.
You know, I've always heard of the Eye of the Anvil. I've never been there before, but I thought maybe it might be a nice place to try one day.
Yeah, one day. Let me tell you this, Deodi. I know your little party has important things that you need to do. So how about this? If you find yourself at the liberty that you can wander around Austeel on your own, without the worries and chains that bind you, you go to the Eye of the Anvil. And when you're there, I don't know.
Ominous, but I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, Deodi, you'll find that I have a dark sense of humor.
And like, there's like a flash, like a wily flash that pops across her face, but then it's sort of replaced with a brief sadness, and then she smiles again.
And Deodi smiles and nods his head, "See you at the anvil," and turns away and walks back around the corner to the group.
And as you turn the corner, she does shout out to you one more time. She says, "Oh, Deodi."
And Deodi stops and looks back.
She takes one last moment to look at you, and she says, "Keep Lewid and Abigail close."
And Deodi flicks his eyes to the side and then looks back at her, unsure, and just nods his head yes.
She gives you a wink and pulls her hood close around her and vanishes into the darkness.
And Deodi, turning, trying to process everything that just happened, walks slowly back towards the group. Deodi is a combination of so many different things. There is a huge smitten quality upon him. He's also in a state of confusion, trying to process everything that just happened. But there's like a smile on his face, but also body language that indicates that he's a little bit uncomfortable. It almost looks like a type of love in some way.
Yeah, and you come back around the corner, and you're radiating this energy. And you immediately see all the party just staring at you.
She told me some things that I still have to process. But I think most importantly, Abigail, she knows your name.
Oh, I knew she was no good.
Chaos, I'm inclined to say, it goes up. My reasoning is, while you did get some good rolls, you learned some uncomfortable information that bodes more chaos for the city, and you yourself were maybe not fully in control of your feelings, and you put somebody in an uncomfortable position. I feel like the general vibe is chaos, not comfort, you know?
Okay. Then we are at a 3.
Back up to a 3.
Now, do we, because that was an interruption, do we go back to the whole perilous journey, undertake a perilous journey role?
We don't need to redo those roles. The roles exist in the world, especially since I gained experience from one of them.
Mm-hmm.
They exist. My logic here is that we were interrupted on our journey on the way there. So I'm completely comfortable saying that interruption was the discovery we ran into.
Yeah.
We're past the perilous journey. We're on the other side of it.
Okay. So you think this scene is arriving at the Chapel of Prosperity?
It might behoove us to have this scene maybe be Deodi fills us in on what Willow told him, and we open the door and make our way to the Chapel of Prosperity, and then have whatever happens at the Chapel of Prosperity be its own contained scene.
Yeah, for sure. So this scene is, we exit the wall in the Brittle Ash District.
Yeah, I think that's good. Let's roll for chaos. We're 3.
Yep.
I got it this time after you rolled us an incredible interruption.
I still cannot believe that I just happened to roll
a 2 out of all the numbers on that one die.
Well, impressively, I rolled a 3, so this is an altered scene.
Okay.
I feel like we're rolling more changes to scenes the lower the numbers are, which makes no sense.
So stupid.
So this is an altered scene. There's so many things that could be altered. I think maybe DOD, I think the most valuable part of the scene is DOD is filling us in. Maybe he doesn't tell everybody. Maybe he doesn't want Sunder to know. Maybe he's worried about Lulu and Lulin knowing. So maybe it's just to the party, the main party, Lewitt and Abigail.
Yeah.
Or he withholds information. If you want to play it that he like holds back certain things he learned about Willow.
Yeah, for sure. I think that is exactly what happens. Yeah, he isn't upfront about all of the information. He doesn't say everything he learned.
Sunder holds his badge in front of him, and the wall starts to glow blue and slowly piece apart as stone falls to the ground and then evaporates into light, into magic, revealing an exit from the dark walls of Osteel into the brittle ash district. It's starting to grow dark outside, so it's not the sunny reprieve we might want leaving these darkened corridors, but it's good to be out again. We step into the evening air, and we are greeted by the ash that covers the ground of this district. The air is dry, and it's like stepping out of something unpleasant into yet another reminder that a lot of unpleasantness exists in this city. Lewitt is still holding Abigail, gently, because she'd have a great deal of difficulty walking. Lulu hops out, and she looks happier than most to be out of those walls.
Diodi's feeling a little bit weird. It's hard to put into words. It's almost like the weight of a burden he shouldn't know and can't fix. He knows he needs to share some of this information with the group, but he hasn't done it up until this point, and he knows he needs to do it soon. And he's not quite sure what to say exactly about Willow, or the information that she has given him, but it's hard to bring those words out. And he's sure that everybody else is wondering what in the world he talked about with this person and why he hasn't shared it with them so far, which only makes him even more nervous about sharing it. Before DOD does speak up, Sunder, behind the rest of the group, as they've exited this wall, he looks at everyone and he speaks up.
I will help escort you to the Chapel of Prosperity, but I must go after that. I fulfilled my promise to all of you, and I've helped you out, but I cannot stick around any longer. I'll make sure you get there safe, but then I will be on my way.
We understand, Sunder, and truly, thank you for your help so far.
Of course, I may not agree with everything that is happening, but I just want to see the people of this city prosper.
Sunder, now is probably not the right time to be asking a favor, but seeing as how you have aligned yourself in some way with the Thronebreakers, I met a friend in the wall by the name of Forrest. It seems at some point you confiscated something of great value to them.
Yes, of course. Forrest. They were quite a problem for Family Osteel. But now that things have changed, I do remember where we placed their stuff. What is it that you're looking for specifically?
A locket. It was a locket of great importance, and I would appreciate it if either you could get it back to them or you could give it to me when I see you next.
Do we know where all the stuff would have been placed? Do you think it would have been at the guard shack? Do you think it would have actually been taken inside the castle?
Good question. Because I doubt that they would imprison people in the guard shacks, in the guard houses. So there's probably a dungeon somewhere. Well, yeah, we know there is one because Thebia is there. She was taken to some kind of prison away from the castle.
Yeah.
Wonder if it's in the same place as Thebia.
Yeah, that would make sense. Like a place of just essentially, you know, where they keep the do-batters, but also the confiscated stuff. It makes sense to have it in one place.
Is it at whatever the Osteel prison is? I'm going to ask. Odds?
A near sure thing.
Yes.
Okay.
That's where it's at.
Cool. Should we get, like, a more official name rather than calling it, like, the prison or the,
yeah,
you know, the dungeon or whatever?
Yeah. So let's do random place.
So you roll the template then.
The noun's place.
Do you want me to roll the noun or do you want to roll the noun?
You roll it.
Okay. The sword.
Swords keep.
That makes sense. That's great. That's a good name. Okay. The swords keep. So that's the place where they... It's the greatest place of imprisonment plus confiscated items. And
yeah, it's where it's like the centralized barracks. It's the prison. It's the dungeon. It's where the entire force of Osteel's guards and knights kind of are based out of.
Yes, of course, Lou and I will absolutely help retrieve that locket for you as soon as possible. But if there is any reason that you need it before I'm able to retrieve it, it is at Swords Keep.
I have another question. Is that where they took Thebia?
How did you know that Thebia was moved?
We overheard it, I suppose you could say.
Well, yes. She was taken to Swords Keep.
So Luid looks at Diodi with sad eyes. He doesn't like the thought that Thebia is being held in a prison. He eyes Diodi a little suspiciously. He sees that... Is Diodi still kind of consumed in his thoughts?
Yeah, yeah.
Luid closes off his conversation with Sunder.
Thank you, Sunder. I don't know that I could go to the Swords Keep anytime soon, but if you wind up there, would you retrieve it for me?
Yes, of course. I would never expect you to go to Swords Keep on your own. That was just in case. But I will grab that for you as soon as possible, Luid.
Thank you. Diodi... We should talk.
I was going to say the same thing, Luid. I don't want to share some of this information with the others.
All right, Diodi, let's split off for a moment. Lulin?
And Lulin looks back.
Would you mind taking care of Abigail for a moment?
Shouldn't we just go ahead and get to the chapel? I mean, we're practically right there.
We will in a moment. I'm sure that this will... It'll just take a second.
Lulin looks really annoyed with you. She comes over.
I have Abigail in my arms, and I kneel down and I find a place where I can lean her against a wall, but I make sure to clean the ash away from the ground before I do. I know how important it is to Abigail to keep herself clean. I don't want to place her in any dust.
And you find as you're brushing the ash away, that it's almost impossible to get all of it clean, but you do your best.
I do my best, and then I place her down, and I say to Lulin,
I know this is frustrating, but it'll just be a moment.
What is more important than getting Abigail to the chapel to get her help?
I lean into Lulin.
Lulin, whoever that elf was that we met in the walls, I don't trust them. There's something strange about her presence. Whatever information she shared with Diodi, I think it might be imperative that we know it.
She doesn't say anything. She just still looks so annoyed, and she uses her hand to wave you off.
She needs to grow up. that was an actual brother response. Myself, it's like, ugh.
Yeah, yeah.
But Lua just shakes his head. He knows he gave a pretty relevant reason, and he walks away, and he says...
All right, Diodi, let's be quick about this.
And Diodi waves you over just, you know, a little ways from the group, not too far or anything like that. It's clear that Diodi's face is emanating this internal discourse inside of himself. He looks at you. Luid, I don't know why. I don't know why exactly this elf in there pulled me aside and didn't want to tell the rest of you. But Willow told me that there's going to be a revolution. The Thronebreakers are planning a move on the city, and I asked her how soon, and she said that she was surprised that it hasn't already happened. They're just missing something. And Luid, I'm worried that something is me.
Luid looks at you. As you say this, I think he knows you're right. all the attempts they made to get you, he knows for some reason you are needed for whatever their plans are. And so he says,
right. D.O.D., I think you might be right. And that's all the more reason that we need to stop them.
I just don't know how we're supposed to do that.
I place a hand on your shoulder.
Together, D.O.D., we're not alone. And together we're stronger than them.
D.O.D. looks comforted by your words, but there's still such unsurety in his face. Unsure of the next actions and what we're supposed to do, even if we are together, to stop the entirety of the Thronebreakers. It's felt like an impossible task to face them even up until this point. And he nods his head. And it seems like he wants to say something else. Maybe about what he encountered with Willow. Maybe something else. You're not sure. And he opens his mouth slightly, but then closes it and looks at you again and says, then if we are going to try to take down the Thronebreakers, which, God, I don't even know how we would do that. We're going to need everybody in the best shape possible. We should go get Abigail the help that she needs.
Right. D.O.D., was that all that Willow said to you?
Yeah, that was it.
I'm going to discern realities.
All right.
Full success. There's only one question I want to ask here, and I know the answer to it.
Yeah.
What here is not what it appears to be. Luid sees that D.O.D. has just lied to him, but he does trust D.O.D., and he knows whatever reason he is withholding whatever information he has, it's for a good reason. And so, Luid tightens his grip on D.O.D.'s shoulder in a comforting way. And he just says,
all right, and D.O.D., remember, I'm here for you. Always.
And D.O.D. is just avoiding eye contact with Luid right now because he knows. He knows he didn't tell him everything, but deep down, D.O.D. knows that he did relay the important information in his mind about this revolution and being worried that he's the last key for the Thronebreaker's move. D.O.D. puts his hand on Luid's shoulder, still not looking him in the eyes, and gives him a small squeeze, and releases and decides to walk back towards the group.
Luid watches D.O.D. go, and then he holds for just a moment, looks up at the rising moon. He takes a deep breath, and then he exhales, knowing that he just doesn't know what they're going to do. So chaos goes down. We're back at a 2. I think we've had a nice reprieve from danger. And I just simply cannot believe that the Chapel of Prosperity is safe for us right now.
Yeah, we've talked about, because Felix, you know, didn't pursue them, when he's a very, very capable person, it almost feels like a tactical retreat that would fall into some plan of Rosalind's. I mean, are we on the same page when it comes to what we think might be happening in the chapel?
Yeah, I think we are, because he's a brother. He'd have access to the chapel in some way. We don't know if he's been excommunicated or removed from the Brotherhood in some way, shape, or form, but he knew about Whittleby. He knew about Girish. He knew they both helped them in the past. He beat the crap out of Abigail, knowing that he wasn't trying to kill her and that she might need help. It almost seems, dare I say it, too convenient?
Absolutely. I firmly believe that our beloved group is about to get ambushed in the Chapel of Prosperity by Rosalind, Brother Felix, and other members of the Thronebreakers. Dude, there's no way. It's an altar, but
it's an altar.
The fact that I even rolled an altar.
Well, that's the thing. That's interesting. Ambush implies violence. Maybe they're not immediately hostile.
Maybe they're intimidating, but not attacking immediately.
Yeah, so there's not an ambush at the Chapel of Prosperity. They're waiting for them there, and they're not trying to hide it.
The group walking together once again, Abigail back in Luwud's arms, and Dioti by Lulin's side at the front of the group, Sunder following behind everybody. Lulu beside Luwud's side. Everybody's walking through the streets. The moon is over the horizon. It is brightly shining upon the streets of the Brittle Ash District, through every alleyway, and glimmering on the ash, almost giving it a sparkling quality. As we walk through the streets, it's quiet, abnormally quiet. Austeel, of course, has a general bedtime. People go inside for the night. But even so, people are usually here and there walking around still, just getting last-minute things done when it's this time of night. But here, in this moment, there's nobody out, not a soul that you see. And as we approach the chapel and get closer and closer, two dimly lit torches surrounding the main archway entrance of the chapel are burning, with the door, the giant wooden door that leads into it, having seemingly been busted open from when the guards had chased us into the tomb of the High Death. So these doors are wide open. And as we get closer and closer, we realize that not only are there no people in the streets of the Brittle Ash District in general, we hear no commotion of the brothers inside this chapel.
We're looking up the steps towards the threshold, and Luwud looks around, and he remembers the vague images of when he first arrived here. Elves in white robes running around, their robes stained with blood as they were tending to people on beds lining the outside of the chapel. It was so frantic and kinetic. But now all the beds are empty. No one is here. And Luwud looks around. I'm going to discern realities. One question, semi-success. What here is not what it appears to be.
It is so unnerving when you see what you see. Up at the top of the stairs, at the archway that leads into the chapel, boy, does it stick out like a sore thumb. There is a badge of the Broken Throne plastered on the side of the archway.
Everyone, I think there's someone waiting for us.
A huge thanks to everyone for listening to episode 15 of Roland Tells Story of Luwud and Dioti. We are so excited that so many people are still loving the story that we're randomly rolling up and sharing with the world. We put our hearts and souls into this podcast, and we are so glad that our Patreon supporters all recognize that. A humongous shout out to all of those over at Patreon still trusting us with your money. We hope to eventually make this our full-time jobs, and those of you who currently support us are the first steps toward that dream. We can't thank you enough. If you want to be a part of that step towards that dream and also want exclusive content that you can't get on our normal podcast feed, like bonus episodes, access to our Discord, or see private information like our character sheets, then head on over to our Patreon. The link to that is in the description of this episode. If you want to connect with us or talk about us on social media, check us out on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at RollAndTellPod. Exiting the City of Fear for our party members may have been a calm experience, but the information Dioti and Luwud learned from Willow is invaluable, and it seems, based off of what they've just found outside the Chapel of Prosperity, that they might have to act on that information sooner rather than later. But we won't know until the dice tell us next time, as we roll and tell.
Are you looking for a D&D podcast with a dark side? Something more like Game of Thrones and less like Monty Python? Tale of the Manticore is part dark fantasy audio drama, part solo D&D RPG. There's no plot armor here. The dice make all the important decisions. Join me as I resurrect the excitement, wonder, and emotion of old school D&D. Made for a mature audience, Tale of the Manticore is both a fiction and a game. It's the story where chaos rolls.